Recorded Books and One-Click Digital present Nagasaki, Life After Nuclear War by Susan Southard, narrated by Tracy Kato Kiriyama, and including an exclusive interview with the author conducted just prior to public and transportation sites. U.S. bombers flew over Nagasaki day and night en route to targets across Japan. Nagasaki prepared itself for another attack. To fortify citywide defense measures, municipal leaders reinforced anti-aircraft, searchlight, and radar brigades, repaired hillside shelters weakened by rainfall, kept water tanks full, and secured emergency telephone communication systems. In a multi-tiered firefighting strategy, 37 teams totaling nearly 3,300 workers were deployed throughout the city to lead emergency fire brigades, each with its own pumper truck, and some with gasoline-run pumps as well. Civilian bucket brigades remained trained and ready. In the event of an attack, auxiliary police and fire units were prepared to direct pedestrian and vehicle traffic, support first aid and epidemic prevention efforts, and oversee the disposal of the dead. City and prefectural leaders selected additional sites for emergency relief stations, and more than 280 doctors and nurses were in place to execute the city's crisis relief plan. Though some doctors were young, not yet fully trained medical students who had received their degrees early to fill in for physicians drafted into the military. Concrete buildings in the city and surrounding villages served as emergency evacuation sites. Clothing, medicines, and large stores of rice, noodles, soy sauce, condensed milk, dried sardines, salt, corn, and soybeans were stockpiled inside Urakami Church and other buildings believed to be safe from attack. To hinder enemy vision of potential targets, the city implemented mandatory blackouts. Families were forbidden to use lights after dark, and factories operating overnight were ordered to cover their windows to eliminate any seepage of light. From inside their homes and air raid shelters, children listened to and glanced up at Allied planes overhead. Some learned to identify each type of aircraft by the sound of its engines. Heeding the national government's call to evacuate their children to rural areas outside the city, in late 1944, Nagano's parents sent Kuniko, 13, and Seiji, 9, to live with Nagano's grandparents in Kagoshima, at the southern tip of Kyushu. Nagano's older brother was drafted and sent outside the city for training, so Nagano, mandated to serve as a mobilized student worker, remained in Nagasaki with her parents. Up until then, we were an ordinary family. Her loneliness was unbearable, and in the spring of 1945, she begged her parents to let Kuniko and Seichon come home. After much discussion, her mother finally gave in and agreed to let Nagano go to Kagoshima to retrieve them, but she was adamant that Nagano could bring them home only if they wanted to come. Otherwise, Nagano could not bring them back. Nagano eagerly agreed. She rode the train to Kagoshima alone, and when she got there, her brother and sister insisted that they had made good friends there and did not yet want to return home. When Nagano pressed them with different reasons they should come back, Kuniko and Seiji began to cry. "You shouldn't force them," Nagano's grandparents scolded her. But Nagano didn't listen. During Kuniko and Seiji's school break, she took them by train back to Nagasaki. 4 months later, on the morning of August 9, Nagano and her family completed their calisthenics. By this time, people across the city were awake, and everyone, including Nagano, was hungry. Mothers, grandmothers, and daughters scraped together meals out of acorns, sawdust, soybean grinds, potato stems, peanut shells, and pumpkin gruel, with protein sources from bugs, worms, rodent flesh, and snakes. One girl Nagano's age was so thin that her friends called her Senko, incense stick. Others fought lethargy resulting from a combination of malnutrition and lack of sleep. A citywide air raid alarm wailed across loudspeakers and radios, prompting formulaic responses. Factories stopped production. Hospital staff carried their patients to their designated shelters. People across the city pulled on their air raid hoods, and parents yelled to their children to run for cover in the holes beneath their houses or in nearby air raid shelters. Thousands of people, including Nagano and her family, huddled in these dark, damp caves. Mothers, aunts, and eldest sisters stayed behind to fight anticipated fires in their homes. After a long wait, the all clear sounded. Nagano returned home and prepared herself for work. She had received a ration of new white running shoes, a rare treasure in the summer of 1945. But she wanted to protect them from becoming soiled, so she chose instead to wear geta, raised wooden sandals. The city was bright in the morning sun when she departed for work, leaving her mother and younger sister and brother behind.